This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing his column for Real Clear Politics about the challenge to American colleges and universities identified over these last years because the inability of the universities and colleges to understand that they're regarded as not trustworthy means that from the outside, there must be strong voices to guide them. They do not see the problem, clearly. The problem is everywhere. Perhaps that is the beginning of their search. Peter, a very good evening to you. Thank you. The problem, let's identify it. They do not think there's a problem. That in itself is a problem. But in addition to that, what we have in this spring and summer of 2024 was a demonstration that the universities tolerate hate speech and anti-Semitism and cruelty, tolerate it in the name of academia. Your essay identifies how we got into this mix. Is there a one simple formula they used, or was it a variety of places to go ever and ever deeper into intolerance? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, there are a variety of ways in which the universities are able to shirk accountability for their actions. But before mentioning those points, it's worth emphasizing your opening point, which is the universities still don't think that very much is wrong with them. Their view is that the right is a perennial enemy of the universities, and the right has seized upon a few outrageous examples, a few outliers. But fundamentally, the universities are just fine. This is a view shared by many. How can they get away with that? Well, I think about it by analogy to other enterprises. You know, in business, if a company goes bankrupt, well, you get rid of the denizens of the C-suite. If a baseball team comes in last place, you fire the manager or the players, and so on. But what happens when a university screws up? Well, who's in charge of the universities? The professors themselves exercise a huge amount of power. It's the tenured professors who decides who gets hired, who gets fired, who gets tenure, who doesn't. And the administrators come usually from the professorial ranks, so they share the same views with the professors. And then the people who have the most power at the university, actually, the members of the board, they have the power, after all, to hire and fire university presidents. Well, they're typically not that familiar with academic affairs, or they're on the board in order to go along and get along and perpetuate the status quo. And the status quo, as we've seen very vividly since the October 7th 2023 massacres in Israel, the status quo is in very bad shape at our universities.
You write that they have promulgated, which is a polite way of saying they've spread illiberal rules governing speech, sexual misconduct, and the process due those accused of it, and protest. In other words, they've designed a system that cannot be solved, correct? I mean, if you speak against them, you're censored. If your conduct in any fashion demands due process or at least a hearing, you're excommunicated. And if you trouble them on the faculty, they'll get rid of you by saying you're not good enough for tenure. There's no way in, Peter.
I think that's right. And I'd add one more feature of the system they've constructed. They put a high premium on producing scholarship that is very narrow. It's technical and arcane. In other words, they encourage the production of specialists. They oppose the cultivation of generalists. What that means is that in order to get tenure, you have to mold yourself in a way that makes it impossible, or at least very difficult, to teach the kinds of courses that undergraduates need in order to acquire a decent education in the basics of American politicalizing ideas and institutions, and in Western civilization. So yes, you've got a kind of hermetically sealed system. And now we are asking the people who built this hermetically sealed system to reform it. Good luck.
I enjoy now and again speaking with scholars. They write books, really good books, narrative history. I'm always struck, however, whenever we touch upon something that's here in the 21st century, as opposed to my favorite, which is before the 20th, the 19th to BCE, we touch upon, and the presumption is invariably that I'm politically trustworthy, immediately. Now, the fact is, my job is not politics. My job is telling stories. And so, therefore, I'm neither this nor that. Often when I'm speaking to a guest, he's a guest or she's a guest. But the presumption is, if you're an educated person who reads books, especially the books of professors, you're one of them. Isn't that odd, Peter?
It is very odd to make such sharp distinctions. Here's one source of the problem, is to associate the term scholarship, and for that matter also science as well, with, again, narrow pursuits conducted in the university in accordance with their understanding of disciplinary standards. In the periods where you prefer to dwell, at least your spirit prefers to dwell, before the 20th century, to be a scholarly student of affairs really meant to be well-educated, to read generally, to read works of history, to know languages, to know literature and philosophy, and yes, also to have studied the sciences. Today, to be scholarly means to have acquired expertise in an extremely narrow field, in which only a small number of other people can actually understand what you're saying and evaluate your evidence and arguments. I think we need to reclaim the notion of what it means to be scholarly and push it back in the direction of well-educated.
We need to make a distinction between private colleges and universities and public schools as well, because they do have different mission statements. What we're speaking to right now, does it apply to one more than the other, or are both in trouble?
Well, I do think that our elite private universities are in the most trouble, and that's bad for the nation, not only because many of our future leaders pass through them, but these institutions also produce a disproportionate share of the graduate students who will go on to become the assistant professors and eventually tenured professors of the next generation. But for that reason, public universities who hire graduate students from private universities do display some of the same pathologies that we find in concentrated form in the elite private universities.
If I understand the diagram, the professors with tenure hire the next generation of teachers, and their graduate students and their research fellows have ambitions to be just like the professor. The professors also, when they're either fortunate or in the target zone, become the deans and provosts and presidents of universities, who hire similar deans and provosts and assistant deans of the universities. So everything is spawned by the profession of the professors. The professors have tenure. Is that a problem?
It's a big problem, and in a way you've just outlined it very nicely. We should remember what the original purpose of tenure was. The original purpose of tenure was to produce a rank of scholars, of professors who were independent thinkers, who could follow the argument where it led, could collect evidence, could analyze, could expound propositions without fear of retribution. But as a practical matter, it works very differently. It allows professors to sink into intellectual ruts. It gives you an interest in not ruffling feathers in the communities in which you'll live for 30 or 40 years. And yes, it gives you the power to appoint the next generation. And it turns out that there's a proclivity among the people who exercise that power to seek out, to promote people who agree with them, people who will defer to them, people who will carry out their research programs. So this is unfortunately in practice, tenure has produced the opposite of its goal. Instead of producing a vigorous community of free speech. It has produced a communities with a weighty and stifling conventional wisdom.
What is to be done? We go to the University of Texas at Austin and meet a man named William N. Bowden, Executive Vice President and Provost of UT at Austin. Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution writing his column about Real Clear Politics.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.